Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Bootstrap Web number 107. Brian, what's up, baby? We're talking MicroConf.
Yep, that's right. What's up there, Jordan? It's been a couple weeks. I know we took a couple weeks off there. Sorry about that, folks. We've been traveling to the desert to meet up at MicroConf.
Yes, and then dealing with the aftermath. But we're back. And yeah, it's kind of interesting to not do a MicroConf recap episode immediately after, but actually a few like weeks after. So now it's what's still there? What resonated to the point of still lingering and bouncing around our heads?
Yeah. Yeah. I think right now we're about 2 weeks out. So,
2 weeks,
something like that. I can't even keep track anymore. It's too much going on.
I think that's right. I mean, overall, man, I love it there. It's so much fun. And, I wasn't 100% engaged the way, you know, that I feel like I normally would because my wife had just given birth a few days prior.
Yeah.
Man, it's such a unique conference. It's just the right size and everything feels so relevant. It's not like other conferences where you can just kind of ignore 50% of the stuff and because it just doesn't apply to you. Here, it's just everything. And it's so easy to get into conversations with people. Everyone just shares everything. It's a very unique thing. It's great.
Absolutely. It's a great community. I feel like it gets better and better every year. And I think that's probably, I mean, I'm sure that it does get better every year, but I think it's probably because the more you go back every year, the more people there are to catch up with. And that was certainly the case this year. So that's my biggest reason for going in the first place. I don't care who's speaking, to be honest. The speakers were great, but I go to see all my people.
Yeah, and so the prior year was my first. So this is the first time I've gone back, and I found the same thing. Even if you hadn't talked to someone in a year, you saw them at the last MicroConf and you immediately reconnect. You know, it might have just been one conversation you had at the last one. And then this is like doubles your relationship. You're like, okay, now we can go even further in and be even more open and more honest with each other. And they adjusted some formatting things starting a little later, gave time to kind of hang out and be more casual about breakfast and kind of bum around and talk to people. And then I feel like they gave more time for lunch also. And I feel like that's where I got the most value.
Yeah. Lunch felt like almost 2 hours, right?
Something yeah. It was a long time. And I think they did that on purpose.
Yeah.
And
that was
what happened was you'd listen to a speaker and then you'd go to lunch and you'd be able to talk about that topic or whatever else came to mind with the people that you're at lunch with. And you kind of have an extended rolling conversation and, you know, they do the food was good. I remember that.
It was good. Yeah.
And then they had people just kind of take your dishes away and then you're left just sitting at a table with people and you just kind of, you get into it.
So yeah, I think that there were a few like conference related changes. Like you said, the schedule, the venue was different. It was at the Palms this year, which I liked. You know, I thought it was probably better than the Tropicana. I liked the upstairs where they had the after parties, the one with the outdoor space. That was really cool. I liked some of the formatting things that were different. The surprise speaker from Stripe, right?
Is that Collison?
Patrick Collison, yeah. I like that, just that idea of having a surprise speaker, like especially for folks going back every year. I felt like it was like an Apple event. Like, what's the secret?
Right, what's going to happen?
Feature going to be this year? You know?
Yeah, that was unexpected, and also the fact that I don't know about you, I'm not a fanboy of that many entrepreneurs. You know, I don't see the point in it.
Yeah. No, I didn't really know too much about him. I probably heard an interview with him or two, before, but obviously, you know, co-founder of Stripe. I mean, that's a huge story to hear about.
Right. And he was so humble and like smart and, you know, the guy, I don't know, God knows how much the guy's worth on paper, but he came off as an entrepreneur. Someone in the hustle like us. Okay, maybe his thing happened to blow up to global proportions, but he's still kind of doing it. And it didn't feel that disconnected. It wasn't like, I'm a super successful billionaire and I will come down and give you my lessons. It wasn't that at all. It was like a conversation with someone else like us.
Yeah. And, you know, I think things like that, like speaker spots and things were, that's like icing on the cake to me. You know, again, like I didn't go out there for that, but I still, you know, thoroughly enjoyed every talk. I actually jotted down a bunch of notes, which I'm sure we'll try to talk through here today. I mean, I think the other big takeaway that I'm kind of reminded of year after year is, for me, like the experience of MicroConf, I'm sure everybody else can relate to this too. It all depends on what you're currently focused on in your business. And whatever's happening in your personal business is going to put all of MicroConf in a certain light, or you're going to see MicroConf in a different perspective. I mean, for example, last year, literally like a year ago, this time a year ago, I went into MicroConf a little bit freaking out, like not knowing what my next business was going to be, because I was kind of, I think, in the process of selling Restaurant Engine at that time. It wasn't sold yet. I think I was just starting that like due diligence process somewhere in there. And at that time, like I knew that I was exiting, and I had no idea what, like Audience Ops did not exist when I was on the flight going to MicroConf. And then the concept for Audience Ops came together while I was literally like in the hotel at MicroConf.
Right. And that colors your whole experience.
Yeah. And it was a combination of all the conversations that I was having with folks at MicroConf that helped to spur on the idea of Audience Ops. And just getting inspired by hearing what folks are doing and where things are at. So that definitely was a huge experience. But then this year, a year later, I mean, I'm running Audience Ops. It's up and running. It's growing faster than anything I've worked on before. And that also changes my whole perspective at MicroConf in terms of the things that I'm taking away from every conversation, the things that I'm taking away from the talks, the notes that I want to jot down. I mean, I'm using the information differently this year. There are probably some other questions on my mind right now related to growth and managing a team. I think I had a conversation with someone about this at an after party. And maybe MicroConf just isn't the conference for this type of thing, but I thought that there wasn't a whole lot on managing a team or a growing team and being, not even just being a manager, but being like, I don't know. Like the term CEO comes to mind. I don't think of myself in that term, but like growing a company to the next level and not just scrapping along and doing whatever quick tactic you can get to customer number one. I think now there are more folks who are a little bit further along, you know, running more sizable companies. And I would have liked to see or hear from folks who are a little bit more in that world. There are folks that I spoke to in the hallway track that would kind of fit that. And those tend to be the people that I try to seek out and talk to. And I'm still looking for more people like that to reach out to.
You know, when I heard things, the guy from Teamwork, the CEO of Teamwork, which was a great talk, he talked about being a CEO and the challenges he had with it. And that stuff went in one ear and out the other for me, because that's not my problem right now. My problem isn't hiring and managing. My problem is, you know, something else. And I was sitting next to Justin McGill, our buddy from LeadFuse, and he's listening to a talk and he's just hearing completely different things than I'm hearing. I remember one of his big takeaways that he was talking about was focusing on each step of the onboarding funnel. And it's because he doesn't have a leads problem. He has a conversion problem.
Right. He's focused on onboarding right now.
Right. And I don't have an onboarding problem, so that like I ignore that and I figure out like, no, how do I find bigger customers? So it really just filters through and it gets applied to your situation. So every time you go, it's going to be different.
Yeah. So like for you, like what kind of mindset were you in going into MicroConf in terms of like what was your hope to get out of this year's MicroConf?
Oh, well, I'll tell you the most painful lesson was at dinner, and when I walked headfirst into a gigantic pane of glass, and
oh, like, that was hilarious!
Shattered my face.
I was there. That was so funny because we were at a group of, there was like 12 of us at that dinner. So like all of us are basically watching that, and everyone just kind of erupted in laughter at when it happened.
I cannot tell you how much that hurt. It hurt up until like a few days ago.
And you had a huge bump on your head
too. Oh my God. I was FaceTiming with my kids. Oh, we're sitting at dinner. FaceTime comes in. My kids are in the bath. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to say hi to my girls. And so I just look up and I see what was by the pool. And
I'm going to walk out to the pool now.
And start walking. Oh my God. I cannot believe how hard I hit my face. There was just like an oily smudge of my forehead and nose.
The funniest part is that your family saw it happen too over FaceTime.
Yeah, my kids were like, Dad, what's going on? I was like, oh, like my jaw hurt for a week, the back of my neck, it might have been a concussion. It was unbelievably, if it wasn't more so painful, it'd be embarrassing, but I was focused on how much it freaking hurt.
Man. Like, what, you know, we're not joking around to make this sound more dramatic. Like, you literally had like a huge welt on your forehead.
Yeah. Like. So that was the low point. That was a good, like, humbling experience. So going in, what I wanted, the first thing is to connect with a bunch of people and have fun, and have fun in a way that's like, it's like beneficial for your business, but you don't need to be cynical about it because it's just fun. So that it's just like a win-win in that way. You just talk to people, hang out and learn, and it's good for your business, and it's fun to like share and hang out. So it's like an all around good experience in trying to better your business and have a good time at the same time. So that's like what I remember from the first time. And I was like, it's such a pure experience. You don't have to be cynical. You don't have to only try to benefit for yourself. At the same time, it's not like this frivolous trip to Las Vegas when I have like a 4-day-old at home. So it was really, that's what I was looking for. I was like, I'm not going to feel guilty about leaving the house, and I'm not going to feel bad about like trying to like get more benefit for the business. It's kind of, they just go together, which is, I think, the nice part.
Yeah. And it, like, on that note, I think for me too, every year is that it's a chance to break away from work and the day-to-day of grinding away at the business. I mean, have a break from that, but it still feels like, it doesn't feel like work, but it's still productive, and it's energizing, and it adds fuel to the business. It's not just a vacation on a beach.
Right. And you get to step away and take a bit more strategic view. And I can't help but like coming up against other people and just hearing what they're doing and comparing myself. And that's just really motivating to kind of see what people are doing and what people have in success and what they're struggling with. And the other thing was that Ben was going to be there also. And we don't get to hang out in person very often.
Yeah, that was cool hanging out with Ben.
Yeah, we had a few like nights of like, you know, a few too many drinks and like laughing a lot at like 2 a.m. And that's really healthy. It's good. It's good for you. It's good for the business. It's good for the relationship. Just kind of reconnect. We had a few like drunk moments of like, not confrontation, but like bringing something up that might have been contentious that we got to laugh about because we were in person. Uh-huh. And that helped.
Yeah. I mean, I went into this year, I had one thought on my mind, and that was to learn more about growing a remote team. I kind of talked about that a minute ago, but this thought of like how to improve company culture, like going beyond just Slack. And I mean, to be honest, I don't, like I said, I don't think that I really got the info or the answers I was looking for. I don't even really know what the questions are. I just kind of, something that I've been thinking about. And actually Claire Liu's talk really resonated with me quite a bit. And I shot her an email while we were there at MicroConf to say I wanted to, you know, try and catch her while we were there and talk. But, you know, I guess we just kind of kept missing each other. I do have an appointment to talk with her next week, or actually tomorrow.
Give a little more background on who Claire is. Is she the one that works at Know Your Company?
Yes. Yeah, Claire Liu is the founder of Know Your Company. So why don't we start going through the talks?
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
But while we're talking about her, you know, I think she was like the second speaker on the first day. Really good talk. Talked about Know Your Company, which is an app that was kind of born from 37 Signals, and kind of spun off, and she's running it. It's about knowing your company and knowing your employees. And I'm actually still pretty unclear about how it works, because they're pretty they don't really show you how they're software works or how their service works. Really, they just talk about the problem and the pain point, and if you have it, here's what it's going to cost, you know, $100 per employee, and it's not a recurring thing, which was interesting. That was really most of what her talk was about, was how she's building this as really like a one or two person company without a recurring revenue model. The note that I put down while she was talking was she said something to the effect of filter for high commitment in-person demos, meaning like they only take customers through the in-person demo process. I think she was talking about that they're going to be launching a self-service sign-up pretty soon. But I mean, it's been like over a year of her running this company just doing in-person demos and kind of limiting it that way, so that she has to talk to every lead that comes in. I think that's just really smart. I think there are so many new startups just trying to get a sign-up form up and running, and they launch to crickets. But when you just get on the phone with people and you invite people in to request phone calls, and that's the only way that they can buy your product, it kind of forces them to go through this funnel where you can learn exactly what they need and really to perfect the product. I think that's what she's been focused on.
Right. And even in the demo, if it's not a good fit, they don't try to push the sell. I think overall, it was just an exercise in, right, it has that 37 signals, slightly unconventional approach to things. And that's what I took away from it. This is a software product. You can't see the software. There are no screenshots. The pricing isn't like per month. It's just flat $100 per employee. You know, that's just a completely different approach. And it shows that if you get the problem and the solution right and match it with the right audience, you don't kind of have to do it exactly how you see your competitors doing it or everyone else doing it. You know, there are other apps that do this, and they're not really selling an app. They're selling something totally different. They're selling, you know, the ability for someone who runs the company to know whether or not their employees are happy or satisfied. And for that, right, they had a specific size of company, right? 25 to 75, something like that, 10 to 50, whatever they had, it was a defined segment.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually interested to hear how that works, because I don't know exactly how their service works, but I think it is interesting, and I'll be talking to her tomorrow. I guess I'll pull out a couple of, like, we won't be able to go through everyone who spoke, but just some of the more some of the interesting things that I wrote down. So Des Trainor, I think he was the first speaker, founder of Intercom. Great talk there. So the things that I wrote down were, one thing was, why do you exist other than to make money? Which was interesting. I mean, obviously we're all trying to grow revenue and be profitable, and that's important to, you know, grow an actual sustainable business. But I think at a certain point, if you're going to go long with a business as they've done, and as, you know, most of us are thinking about doing, you have to think about, well, why do you exist other than to make money? And I think that will also help you grow a bigger business if you have this kind of mindset of what's the bigger picture here, and who does this impact? Why does it impact them? How does it impact me and my people? And I thought that was interesting. The other thing that I noted down on that one was, he wrote, know your real, or he said something to the effect of, know your real competitors. For example, when do flowers compete with chocolates? I really like this analogy. I've never heard it put this way before, but it's so true, right? And the other analogy was, when does Twitter compete with games? And so the thinking here is that, you know, you might look at Twitter as like, well, what's the competitor to Twitter? It's Facebook, or it's Snapchat, or it's like another social network. But really, it's competing for your time and attention. So what is the other thing that might take your time and attention? Well, a game might do that, you know, or like, I don't know, walking your dog might do that. So if you think about what the alternative to your service is, I mean, for me, running Audience Ops, the thought that I have is, we're not necessarily up against another content marketing agency. You know, we're really up against a founder writing blog posts themselves, you know, as like, and like, that's a lot of what our clients are thinking about is like, well, I could either write the articles myself and do it all myself, or I can have this other service do it. You know, the other way of thinking about it, maybe I'll hire someone in full time, you know, we're up against like a full time employee hire. So,
right. You know, I think that's part of why your marketing resonates nicely, because you are talking to that person. If you're talking to me, it's not about who you're competing against in terms of other agencies. It's, founders shouldn't write blog posts. It's like, oh, okay. now I'm listening to you. Yeah. The biggest thing I got from Des was, he had this slide that showed the 9X effect, that you need to be 9 times better. I think that was the gist of it. So what he said was, you tend to overestimate the value of what you're offering by about 3x, and your prospects overestimate what they're currently using by about 3x. So 3x and 3x, you kind of have to be 9 times better than what they're currently doing for them to say, ooh, I'm willing to give that a try. I'm willing to change my behavior, go out of my way, pull up my credit card, change my flow, can inconvenience myself, do all those things, you know, that create friction.
Yeah, the cost of switching is so high for everybody.
Right. I read that and right. So this is an example of like, it depends on your context. We had just put up the marketing site for our new checkout product, which is a whole other episode to cover. And as he said this, I went to the marketing site and was like, oh, wow, I am assuming that they think their current solution is terrible. And in my mind, I realized like, oh, I can't assume that. I have to assume that they are going to overestimate what they're currently using. So I need to spend more time rubbing, you know, scratching the pain about this is why. And I immediately I sketched it up in a Google Doc and Ben put it up on the site immediately. Instead of just saying, here are the key features, 1, 2, 3, 4. I said, here are the key features compared to your regular Shopify checkout. So this is bad and this is or the good version. This is bad. So it was an immediate application of like, oh, what am I thinking? I have to – why should I assume that they feel the pain that I know they should feel? It was like it immediately pointed out a disconnect in my assumptions to the market.
Love it. Another great talk was Patrick Campbell, super smart guy talking about pricing and all sorts of metrics and studies related to optimizing your pricing. Obviously, he's from Price Intelligently, so they know a thing or two about pricing. I had dinner with Patrick and a couple people as well. That was we had some really good chats there. The thing that I noted down was this study that they ran. I forgot how many companies they studied here, but the question that they were posing was, what can you improve to grow revenue? Like there are three levels. Yeah, what will make the biggest impact, right? And there are three things that they're comparing: either acquisition, monetization, meaning your pricing, or retention. So, improving monetization, meaning optimizing your price points and matching them up with the right markets, increases growth more than any other of those three. So, like, reducing churn and obviously that's very important, but retention and keeping people around that only increases by something like 3%. Acquisition, you know, getting more traffic and more leads in the top of the funnel, that only increases something like 4 or 5%. But optimizing the right price points can increase something like 13%, you know, over their study. I thought that was really interesting because honestly, if you were to give me those three things and I had to guess, I don't know that I would have guessed pricing at all.
I just say I agree. I say acquisition. I'm like, oh, you need more.
Yeah.
You need more numbers, more trials.
Yeah.
And
I might have said churn. I would have said like once you get rid of the churn problem, everything will be better. But, you know, I even look at my current business compared to the previous business and it's so true. I mean, the price points are completely different. And I mean, you just look at the graphs and it's a completely different story.
Yeah. It's almost like Patrick's talk, it was almost a little scary because it made you realize like, oh man, I need to think about this a lot more. But then it turns optimistic because, you know, part of his talk was at least this is something you have full control over. You can just change your pricing. And that is good to hear because it's hard to wrap your mind around, oh, what happens if we change pricing? We need to talk to our previous customers. You create all these mental hurdles. And the truth is, you can just change your pricing. You can do it. Everything is like imaginary that's stopping you from changing your pricing. There's always a way you can grandfather do this or do that.
We had this conversation at Big Snow Tiny Conf where almost like when you're in some kind of mastermind group or a conversation at a conference between entrepreneurs, the most common advice that one entrepreneur gives to another entrepreneur is, you know, you should really change your pricing, or you should increase pricing. You should charge more.
It's so easy from
the
outside.
And the most common reaction to that is like, yeah, I know. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah. I heard about that too. Yeah. I should raise my prices. Cool. Cool. I should double it until conversions go down. Yeah. Got it.
like everybody is so resistant to that idea, but at the same time, everybody recommends it and it's almost always correct.
it is painfully correct. I look at how much work I do in a given week, and then I identify like the 2 hours a week maybe that I spend on like high value sales, and those guys end up being like 80% of the MRR added that month. And at some point, I'm like, why am I doing all the other work? Why wouldn't I just, you know? And the easiest way to do that is to change your pricing. Then you'll only deal with the people. Yeah, this drives me nuts. It's almost like, you know, my brain now is in new product mode. So we have a new product. When you have a new product, it's kind of like, oh my God, I get to, you know, it's daunting to start from scratch, but you also get to start from scratch. You get to decide how things are. And after working in a SaaS that has a low price point, you know, we have a decent ARPU, average revenue per user, but we still have a lot of people that come in at the lower plans. And I look at that and I'm like, the next thing I do is not going to have that, because it really ends up taking an enormous amount of your time. And I don't think it's worth it revenue wise.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, obviously, you know, the SaaS can grow and you can evolve a SaaS in different ways and start focusing on higher price points. So that's another.
Yeah. Different thing. All right, well, let's push on. I know you have to boogie soon. So let's get moving.
Yeah. Let's talk about day two a little bit. Just one of the attendee talks I wanted to call out, which I thought was really interesting, was Anna from Drip. Just one thing she said I thought was genius what they're doing. I didn't realize they do this. She's kind of the person in charge of doing demos with new customers, right? And they had this like demo hack to convert those consultations into customers. I kind of forgot exactly how it worked. You probably remember, but I think
it impacted me.
Yeah, totally. Like they set up the Drip account and they set up all the automation workflows for the person live on the call, and then it's just a matter of like enter your credit card and it's ready to go.
Right. It's like a trial by default. So if you have a demo coming up, I remember when we first started doing demos, we would do the demo and we would say, okay, I'll keep an eye out for your account. Let me know if you need any help. Then we got a clue and realized it was much better to say, okay, it's the end of the demo. Let's go over to cardhook.com/signup and get you started and I'll help you right now. So it was like asking for the trial right then. They go one step further, even smarter. They just set up the trial.
Yeah, like before the call. Like you're already on a trial.
Well, the thing is, the powerful part, that's one thing. Okay, fine, you already have an account. What they do is they do the demo using that person's trial account. And they put valuable things inside of the account, like a funnel. You know, an autoresponder series.
And this ties right back to what Des Trainer was talking about with the high cost of switching for a customer. That's like especially true in switching your email marketing tool, because it's not just like importing your list. You've got to set up all these automation rules and get the tagging right and all that stuff. And when Anna's kind of walking you through that whole process for you, like doing it for you on a call, that's really, really powerful.
Yep. Yeah, I love that.
I thought Rob Walling's talk was great. It was a little shorter than usual. Talking about unfair advantages. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that was very interesting. He was looking at his history of different products and trying to identify why do some work out so much better than the other. And he kind of came up with like four reasons that things take off where others don't.
Yeah. I think he's like the perfect person to do that talk. I really like that he chose to do this little study, because he's in contact with so many entrepreneurs between the podcast and between running MicroConf and going back over a couple of years here. He's literally able to see all these case studies, and he has a really good reference point to be able to see, okay, why were certain ones more successful, disproportionately more successful than others. And so the four unfair advantages that he pointed to were, you know, be early to a market. And he kind of wrote this off as like, really, you got to be a little bit lucky to be early. And there's not much you can do to control this. Who you know, like what kind of network do you have? Who knows you? So your audience and growth mm-hmm. expertise.
Knowing what to do.
Yeah, basically. So I thought that was really good. Going back to Patrick Collison, CEO of Stripe, that was an interesting surprise speaker. The note that I put down here was, it's not really actionable or anything. I just thought it was an interesting part of the story where he was talking about like how are they able to project growth? I mean, most software can say like, okay, we're getting X number of trials, we're getting X number of users, our growth trajectory over the next couple of months or the next year is looking something like this. But the challenge for Stripe is that they're a payment processor. So it's not only the number of customers that they have, the number of users using Stripe, but it's also what's the growth trajectory of their businesses. You know, that's what made it difficult. So you could have like a huge whale sign up, but back when they sign up, you don't know that they're going to become a whale, you know?
Yeah, hard to project.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And the other interesting question about like why did Stripe take off and gain so much traction so quickly? You know, yes, it's a great product and it's so easy to use, but Patrick definitely pointed to the fact that like, look, the alternatives were so bad. You know, they're and yes, like you look at like a PayPal and Authorize.net, and they're so massive, they're worldwide. Like, who would even think to take them on? And that's exactly what Stripe did. But it seems like almost insane to take on these huge players in the industry. But at the same time, those players suck. Like, they're terrible. The experience from every part of it is absolutely terrible. And it doesn't mean that just any player is going to come in and have the kind of traction that Stripe did. But that definitely played into some of their early success.
Yeah. If he didn't mess around with the market they were going after. And I liked hearing how they began in the most hackiest hack way possible of just not building anything and just building beyond minimum. And then people would come to them and say, so when are you going to transfer money to my bank account? Yeah. And they were like, oh, I guess we got to build that now.
Right.
It was really, you know, it's easy to look at a company worth $5 billion and say, oh, whatever, they must have had all these unfair advantages and that's just a freak or whatever. Then you hear like, no, they did things exactly the way we do it. Exactly, cobble it together, make it work, MVP everything, and let the users push you on which features to make. It was really that was cool. Related to this, before I forget, I want to mention I did have a side conversation in the hallway track with Heaton, who's like the darling of MicroConf.
The thing I love about Heaton and Stelly is like you can just refer to them by first name. Everyone knows exactly who you're talking
about.
Yeah,
come on. Yeah. So I was talking to Heaton and Lars, who's now, where is he now? He used to be at Kissmetrics.
Is he still working with Ramit Sethi?
Yes, he is. Yeah. So I had a conversation with them and we Ben and I asked them about pricing. And one thing that Lars said kind of stuck out in my mind. And he was like, when you think about your pricing, what you want to make sure is that every cohort increases in value over time. And I was like, say that in English. So basically what he was saying was, if your pricing is so rigid that each time you gain 50 customers, those 50 customers will be worth the same thing every month on month one and on month 36, that's not healthy because then you have to continuously gain more customers in order to grow. But if those 50 customers become worth more every month as they move up in different tiers or that whatever the pricing mechanism is that makes them worth more, yeah, like Stripe.
Seats.
Right. Whether it's seats, whether it's price, whatever it is, if that cohort continues to increase in value, then each time you acquire a customer, you don't have to acquire more customers to grow. You're going to grow even if you don't acquire customers.
Right.
So that helped in our like pricing decision-making. I thought that was a really valuable like tidbit.
Yeah, totally. I thought Lars's talk was excellent. I'm not too familiar with him, to be honest. I kind of just learned about him through this year's MicroConf. I thought he was a great speaker. I liked the way that
authoritative.
Yeah, very authoritative.
Yeah, he knows his stuff.
Yeah, knows his stuff. And like, I'm usually pretty skeptical, or I'm not a huge fan of most advice that you hear out there when it's just like, you should always do X and it will work, you know, or don't ever do this. Like things like that just kind of get to me because there are always cases or it doesn't take into account certain scenarios. But I think Lars's talk and the things that he was talking about is kind of an exception to that because he's basically just talking about core key metrics to your business. He was mostly talking about
foundational
churn. And churn, it relates to so many other factors, and like it's a truth. No matter what, if people are leaving your product, there is a huge problem that you need to address. Like, no matter what your business is, and that's one of those things, one of those exceptions to the rule where you can say, like, look, I loved how he put it. You know, if you have a churn rate of 10% more or more, your business is on fire. You know,
right, and it will not be fixed by acquiring more customers faster. And it's not. I liked how practical he was. At first, I felt like you, a bit skeptical of like, okay, I get it, churn's important, but it's important when you have 1,000 customers, not when you have 50. And then he kind of turned me around by the end, because what churn represents isn't that you have a problem churning. It's that you have a product problem.
It's a product market fit problem.
Right. Much bigger issue. And then you can see, oh, then you really don't want to gain 100 customers every month, because they're not going to stay, not because they don't like you or you have some weird problem with payments. It's because you haven't solved the problem for them. And that so it's almost like it's not... Churn is the indicator. It's not the actual problem.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of times this comes down to just attracting the right customer. And sometimes that means adjusting the product or the service or the features of your service to meet a certain customer in a certain place. But I think so many of us, especially bootstrapping, you know, within the first year, it's all about just getting any customers you can possibly get. And I see this a lot with productized services too, where it's like, you know, I'm kind of working with these clients that I've worked with for the past few years, and now I have this productized service, and I want to form a productized service that serves a couple of these clients and a couple of those clients, and because those are the people I already have paying me. But just because you have 2 or 3 or 5 clients, you know, paying you today does not mean that that is the best market to go find 100 of them. You know, I think a lot of the product market fit stuff just comes down to becoming more focused and maybe moving to a different person to focus on.
Cool,
so,
man.
So that's basically our recap. That wasn't everybody at the conference, but you know, those are the things that kind of popped out to me.
Yeah, Tracy Osborne had a good talk about. I mean, it was sobering.
Yeah,
it wasn't like a feel good story. It was like sometimes it sucks.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and she was just she's just aggressive, and she made things happen. And you kind of wanted the story to end like, and then everything took a turn and exploded. And now we're doing great. And it wasn't that. It was like, no, this is kind of the journey I went through. And I feel like people could identify with that. It wasn't putting someone from the top 5% up on a pedestal. It was putting someone who hasn't quite made it, but is tenacious enough that you know they're going to make it. But it was like, it was good. It fit in there properly.
Totally. Yeah, I enjoyed that one. I like the mix of like tactical, actionable talks and some more like story related kind of talks. It was good conference overall.
Yeah, it was good to see you too, my man.
Yeah, good to see you, buddy.
Cool. So you're off to mastermind. Yep. I'm off to write legal contracts.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
All right, man. Take it easy over there.
All right, dude.
See you.